while they're adjusting whatever it is they need to adjust. Your brain this morning, you're looking around. Some of you are smiling, some of you aren't smiling as much as you should, because when you smile, you use less energy. So I'm going to encourage you to smile. It takes fewer muscles. It takes more muscles to frown. So smile or laugh, and laughter connects both sides of your brain. She'll teach this. And so I usually like to start off with like a funny story or something. And so I was thinking this morning of several of them. One of them that my dad just turned 95. I went to his birthday party just 2 weeks ago. This is a true story. And I got a little video I got to play for Toby. He made a little short video that says, "Hi, Toby. I'm your papa," I think is what he says. But, you know, he's funny. I called him a few months back, and he said, "Danny, I just want you to know I got bored," because he lives by himself at 95, still drives, goes to Walmart. He goes, "You know, Walmart's not as much fun as it used to be." He said, "Because they all treat me like I'm half dead. They want to put me in a wheelchair." And he said, "When I get to the register, everybody just moves." He goes, "It's okay, I can stand in line." And he said, "But I thought you might want to know, I was at home and I was tired of being at home and nobody to talk to. So I asked a lady out for a date." So we went out, and he said, "Well, we went to supper." And he said, "That in itself was an experience. But I just want you to know, we sat down. The first thing I told her was, 'Look, I'm not interested in getting married again.'" I said, "Dad, how young was she?" He says, "Well, she's only 81, but I'm a little older than her." I said, "Dad, you're a card, I'll tell you." He said, "Now, it was an interesting date because I can't drive at night, so she had to come pick me up." And we didn't go out for dessert afterwards. She took me straight home. I said, "Dad, you have another date?" "No." I said, "You probably won't either." So, you know, true stories are just humorous. My dad, he's just a card. He really is. He said, "I had to give up mowing the grass because I had a riding mower and I had to stay on it longer than 30 minutes. And I'm supposed to work 20 minutes and then sleep for 30 or rest for 30. And he said, it takes 3 days to cut the grass like that." He said, "That's just not right." So instead he said, "I store them up. So I work all morning, he gets up about 4, and I take a nap about 11. It's a long nap, I don't get up till 3. So he takes all this 30-minute naps and adds them all up. So he takes it in the middle of the day, but he works in the morning and then sleeps all during the middle and then later in the day. And he goes back to work again. He said, "If they ask me, am I spending 30 minutes plus sleeping? I am. There's just all in a row, you know." All right. Bless you, honey.
Thank you. You got me like your shirt. Okay, so Greg, how do I get that on? I'm having to use a different laptop today, so this is going to be a day of grace. So my laptop decided that it wants to retire.
Do you have a clicker?
I do. So how do I do it?
Okay, just a minute.
Oh, you have to do it. Oh, that makes me feel better. Okay, so while he's doing that, I want to, if you do not have one of those beautifully joyful colored folder things, I would encourage you to go back to the back table now and get one, because these are the handouts, the notes. There's 4 different brains on the cover, and depending on what kind of brain you're attracted to, I'd encourage you to choose that folder. Yeah. So we're asking for a donation just to help us cover our expenses. And if you don't have it, no problem. It's not a problem. But if you are able to help us with that, we would bless you in doing that. There's a basket on the table for you. Now, I have worked like crazy for a month at least, gathering together all the stuff I've collected in about 20 years. I've loved to understand the brain and how it works. And so I've intentionally studied it for 20 whatever years or more. And so I want to just state up front, I can't remember where I gleaned what from whom, right? I can't remember, but they're just such great nuggets. And at first I was just collecting for me. I didn't have any idea I was gonna be sharing. So I didn't take the time to document the source. So that's one reason when you read this, that you're not gonna see this came from here and there. And if you ask me, I'll probably tell you, I don't know. So, but I can tell you some of the resources that I've gleaned from for years. Dr. James Wilder is probably one of my top first resource. Dr. Arlene Taylor. These are all neuroscientists. Carl Lehman. Dr. Amen. And I'm trying to think of, there's so many, but anyway, and then some of the more recent studies, you know, brain science is exploding right now because they have new instruments to watch what's going on in our brains. And so it's just really fascinating. I had a really good time with this. So now I'm not going to go into a whole lot of like detailed analysis on the actual parts of your brain. I'll do a little bit of that on Saturday. That's the day we're going to really, I'll tell you what it's called, I'll tell you what part of the brain, et cetera, et cetera. But that's not my goal, because you don't have to be a neuroscientist to know how to help people have a healthy brain and encounter the Lord and get healed. So, but I'll tell you what, it makes a huge difference if you can understand how this brain that Yahweh made works, and you're able to apply that to yourself, and then you're able to apply it to your friends and loved ones that are interested in it. It will help you be a better Christian. It will help you love people more. And so that's one of the huge reasons I believe it's vital that we understand it. Now, I wrote the handouts, the notes, as if I was speaking, because I know that I'm going to be like the fire hydrant up here, blasting you all with information. And believe it or not, your brain, most people's brains aren't wired for information. All of our brains are wired for relationship. So I wanted you to have something you can take home and read it as if I'm speaking, right? And you'll also be given a link to have these, we're recording the videos, to watch them again with your handouts. And if you desire to do a small group or big group or whatever, do it. Let's spread the joy, right? I learned recently from my new research on the brain that there's three things that's really important for a teacher to do. And Danny read my notes and he says, honey, you need to take that off of there. That looks like that's your note to you. And I said, no, it's for y'all to know as well. We're all teachers. So number one, a teacher to be successful is supposed to start with telling you what I'm going to tell you. So I just did a little bit of that. And then secondly, after I tell you what I'm going to tell you, then I need to tell you. And then the third thing is, then tell you that I told you that. So your handout is the third step. Because we don't have enough time for me to go back through and tell you what I told you. But you got it in your little folder. And so Some people's brains are wired. They want to know the schedule. Some people couldn't care less. So for those of you that would like to know, I'm going to tell you. Those of you that couldn't care less, you can take a nap now. What am I going to tell you? Today, the schedule. And all of this is subject to the Lord changing us, right? But we'll go with the flow. But if he doesn't interrupt us, the plan is I'm going to teach until lunchish. That might be 12, might be 12:30, it might be 1. I have no idea. And then we'll have an hour for lunch. Now I'm going to ask you to form a group of 4 people, yourself plus 3 people. And if you came here with someone, I'm going to ask you to be part, make that person, even if you don't like them, part of your group. And then if you know somebody here and you're drawn to them and you're comfortable, make that person part of your group. We're going to form what's called a 3-way bond, and or 4. It's called a family bond. It can be 3 people or 4 people. And you see round tables in the back. At lunchtime is when you're going to want to have those group. You're going to form those groups right before we break for lunch. And I'm going to ask you to eat with that group for lunch each day. And this evening, you'll be with that group as well, because we're going to practice building joy capacity in your nucleus accumbens, which is a banana-shaped part of your brain. So, and the best way to build increased joy capacity is to eat with someone, with a group of 3 or 4 people. Now, each table will have a facilitator there, which will be one of our staff. And so there'll be actually 5 people at your table, but 4 of you are going to be, the purpose of these groups is for you to get to know each other and to build joy. And joy doesn't mean, ha, 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 I feel great, I'm happy. That is not the biblical definition of joy. And we'll look at that in a minute. So, and you're going to stay in this group, like I said, each day, and you're going to... I'm going to give you different exercises to do, and you're going to read. I'm going to go over those as well. So we'll have lunch together. Then after lunch, we're going to come back in here, and hopefully your brains will have had enough of a rest that you can absorb some more. And then this evening, because increasing joy capacity is best done with food, we're going to eat together, supper. And we decided to provide your meal. Our staff prepared it for all of us. And so you will get your food and you'll come and sit at the same table with the same group, even if you didn't like lunch with them, right? You're committed, like you've committed to the chair you're sitting in right now, because I know you. Everybody's brain likes routine and same old, except mine. I love, 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 love change. And boy, did the Lord wire me right for this place, because we change things a lot. And so we'll eat supper together tonight. You'll be building joy around that. And I'll go ahead and tell you a question you're going to be asked so you can be paying attention today. And that question is, what, out of everything you heard today, what impacted you the most? So when you hear something that goes, wow, maybe jot it down for you, because you're going to be asked that question to share tonight. All right, and then after we have our meal together, Suzanne, who's our official farm line dancer teacher, she's going to be leading us in what's called synchronized dance, because synchronized dancing is another one of those activities that increase your joy capacity. And if you have 2 left feet like me, it doesn't matter. Get up there, do it anyway. And you'll be amazed at what happens in your brain. Even if you don't like it to start with, you'll like it before it's over, if you'll stay. If you don't quit, you win. That's the saying around here.
Come on.
Just don't quit. You'll have joy. So, and then we'll try to end at a decent time. We're keeping you guys in mind, make sure you're rested. And that's why we're starting at 9, and so that you can not be absolutely wiped out. All right? That's today. Now we'll talk about tomorrow. It's pretty much the same schedule each day with just different topics. So I'm going to tell you what I'm going to tell you, and then I'm going to start telling you. All right? So your handout, wait a minute. There it is. Yeah. So day one, to start off with, I'm going to tell you that joy means someone is glad to be with me. Joy is not happiness. That's a whole different other happiness and pleasure comes from dopamine. Joy, because somebody's glad to be with you, produces serotonin in your brain. Two different hormones that do two different things. So someone is glad to be with you. If you've ever been around somebody and, man, they just greet you with a big smile and they throw their arms around you and, I'm so glad to see you, that's joy. And if your relational circuits are online, you will feel it. Now, if your relational circuits are shut down and you want to be anywhere but with that person, you're not going to feel that. You're going to feel anti-joy. So anytime you hear me say joy, talk about joy, I'm talking about the fact that you feel that you belong. That's what that is. Someone's glad to be with me. And belonging is the most important emotion humans can feel. And if you don't feel like you belong, you're in a world of hurt. And I'm going to tell you that your brain needs joy if it's going to be healthy and able to relate to Yahweh and other people. Joy is not an option as a human.
Yeah.
It's not optional. The kind of joy we will be talking about, I already said, is not about happiness. It's not about your environment. This joy is a result of knowing and believing that somebody, at least one person on this planet, likes to be with you and enjoys being with you. And the more, the better. We're going to look at what you can do to increase your brain's joy capacity. Now, I love bloopers, and I just made one. And so I'm all tickled up here. I'm all happy to be with me right now. So, my joy brain's capacity. What is that? My brain's joy capacity. And I'm going to talk about what you can do when you feel the opposite of joy. That's anti-joy. We're also going to look at what it takes to have a joyful community, because it's not enough for you alone to have joy. Yahweh designed all of us to be part of a community, a joyful community. And that's where you thrive the best. Families are supposed to be that. And there are these small groups that we're having you be part of. It's supposed to be a joyful community. The church is supposed to be a joyful community, right? Yeah. So we're going to look at what it takes for that. We're going to talk about something called beeps. We're going to talk about masks and pseudo-joy or anti-joy or fake joy. We're going to talk about what brings transformation. And we're also going to talk about what self-justification or self-protection is to relationships in a joyful community. If you're one of those people that defend yourself or self-protect, you are creating anti-joy in that relationship. And there's no way around it. That's what happens when you step into defending yourself or self-protection of any form. We'll look at that in detail, because that is the number one, in my opinion, relational style that sucks the joy out of relationships and out of a community. And we are going to look at, finally, at the end, 19 relational skills that are essential to healthy relationships. And these skills can be learned, and they should be practiced. But they can only be learned and practiced in relationships.
Rhonda, it's so, I didn't do that. It's so important to see you more than that. It's so hard on our brains to not see you.
Are you glad to be with me?
Yeah. Yeah. Why not make my brain go, yay?
Okay, great. Great.
Praise the Lord.
It doesn't matter to me. Okay. All right, so turn in your note. Now, let me say this also. about your brain. If you want to remember something, if you will handwrite it, it tells your brain you want to remember it. If you type it, zilch. It does not do the same thing. So I really struggled with the notes. I really did, because I thought, I want you writing this stuff down. And then I thought, no, because I've got so much to cover and I got to go so fast. And so that's why I went ahead and decided, let's pass them out. I was going to pass them out at the end of the day. But here's what I want to encourage you. If you hear something, it goes, it zings you. It like, whoa, I need to remember that. Write it on your in your notebook. If you'll notice, we put some notebook paper in the back fold flap pocket thing, so you can do that if you so desire. So remember that. If there's something you want to remember, handwrite it. And I remember we had a meeting years ago, man. Marie was here. This is Marie, by the way. I have to honor her. She's she and a group of five other ladies started Harvest Home with us back in 1995. And she was our head intercessor for way after even we moved to the farm in 2007. And so she's one of those bricklayers in the first, before we could lay bricks, we had to get a jackhammer and break up some hard stuff in us. And but anyway, I just, so happy she's here. She's if you have any questions, she's a, I sort of say inner healing specialist, but she's so much more than that. So don't hesitate to pick her heart and brain. So now I said that, I was going to say something around that, but I don't remember what it was now. I don't know where I was going. Oh, handwriting. Oh, I know. We were in a meeting and Marie was there, and one of the leaders said, oh, just a minute, I'll be right back. She runs and goes and gets her notebook, and she comes down and sits, and she says, I got this just in case you say something noteworthy. I have never forgotten that. It just delights me. It just tickles me. So if I say something noteworthy, feel free to write it down.
Yeah, that's good.
All right, let's talk about joy. I'm going to pretty much go through these. I will skip some stuff in these handouts because I know I have more in here than I have time to say. So I went through and highlighted what I don't want to miss. But because you have it, I encourage you to read it yourself, because I am going to skip some things just for because of time's sake, right? Okay, I already talked about true joy releases serotonin, which serotonin releases a true sense in your heart that everything is well and right in my life. That's why you want serotonin. It's peace, it's shalom, and it tells you you're going to be okay. And that's what happens when you know and believe that somebody's glad to be with you. You can go, I'm going to be okay. It's going to be okay. I'm not alone. I do belong, right? So your first experience, this should happen as an infant, your first experience with this joy, this reality that somebody's glad to be with me, should happen as an infant. And it should happen right away. Now, what happens with this thing called joy and serotonin is with serotonin, your first experience with joy is your ceiling. You get the biggest blast from it the first time, and then you want more. So then the next time somebody's glad to be with you, it goes another step up and another step, and you just can keep going and going throughout your whole life of experiencing that feeling that somebody's glad to be with me, that tells me everything's going to be all right. I belong. And so the difference with serotonin and dopamine, the first time you experience it, it comes from a thing. It comes from an event. And it releases pleasure and happiness. And dopamine, the first time you experience it, you can get it from drugs. That's why it's called dopamine. You can get it from alcohol, et cetera, et cetera. And that first experience, you hit this ceiling right here. But the difference with dopamine is you never go higher. And if your body craves more, more, more. That's why it's so addictive. Dopamine is extremely addictive, and it is not the same thing as shalom. It is not the same thing that serotonin gives you. So people get addicted to this and because they're wanting more, but it never increases. That one first time hit is the highest you get. And if you've ever used drugs, you know I'm telling the truth, right? You don't have to answer. So let me talk about these three scriptures here. Psalm 21:6 says, "For you make him most blessed forever, Yahweh. You make him joyful with gladness in your presence." So there's a shalom, there's a serotonin that we're supposed to get from being in Yahweh's presence. And there's nothing else like it. No human can match that in your relationship. Now, Yahweh gave us husbands and wives, and he gave us mothers and fathers and aunts and uncles and families that are supposed to be Christ-like, that are supposed to provide for you serotonin. But in this fallen world, that's not always the case. And so we don't get it from there. But we can always get it from Yahweh, who's always glad to be with you. Remember, joy is somebody's glad to be with me. And Yahweh is always glad to be with you. Yeshua is always glad to be with you, even on your worst hair day. Even when you just blew it for the 50th time and you told Yahweh on time number 49, "I'll never do it again," and you did it, he's still glad to be with you because he's love. And love never fails. And he knows that he's our only antidote. Sin causes blood poisoning. And Yahweh, with Yeshua's blood, has the only antidote there is. So we have to come to him in our messes. Psalm 16:11, "You will make known to me the path of life. In your presence is fullness of joy." You want fullness of joy? You better get in his presence. "In your right hand there are pleasures forever." So he also allows us to experience pleasure as well. And Galatians 5:22, "But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy," somebody's glad to be with me, "peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, self-control," and on. So if I wish I had had time to go through and present more of the scriptures and the biblical part of this. I didn't have time. So I imagine I'm going to teach this again next year. So I'm going to, between now and then, I'm going to go in and flood it with this truth of the scriptures. Right?
Amen.
All right. All of us have a limit or capacity or ability of how much joy we can possess. And that amount determines how much difficulty or pain or trauma or upset we can endure and still remain relational. That's the key right there. All of us can go, "Oh man, this hurts so bad," and we go off by ourselves and be an island and we get over it. That's not how it's supposed to be. We are supposed to experience life's troubles and in the midst of it, stay connected with people. Especially, I'm going to pick on Marie. She's safe. She knows I love her to the moon and back into heaven and all eternity and everywhere. So Marie can do something that triggers me. And if I have a large joy capacity, I should be able to remain connected to Marie and still love her and talk with her, process with her, "Ow, that hurt," you know? But if I don't have a large relational joy capacity, I will either fight, flight, or freeze. And for me in the past, I ran. I ran from anybody that hurt me. I became completely possumized and became a possum and just laid over and played dead. That's not how it's supposed to be. So that's why I'm spending all day today talking to us about joy capacity. It's that important.
Yeah.
It's critical. It's one of the first things we try to do here, because everybody that comes here, staff, resident, it doesn't matter. We all come and we bring our stuff, and we're all been broken, and we've all have stuff we regret and da-da-da-da-da, right? But if we can create a community that's safe with gentle protectors who will love people in the midst of their weakness and in the midst of their junk and embrace them and speak the truth in love, that doesn't mean we're ignoring the ungodly behavior, but we're addressing it with love and gentleness, then we know that if they are halfway committed to getting free, it will make a difference, and that change will happen, right? So it's a big deal. So we have now numerous brain studies that have been done that prove not only the Bible. I mean, this is the Bible's clear about relational skills and loving even your enemies, right? But now brain science is telling us that people will get healed in communities where there are deep bonds of love. The strong helping the weak. Mm-hmm. But the opposite's true. Bonds of fear cause greater distress and trouble. Mm-hmm. Yes, Celeste. Got a microphone, somebody? I'm going to...
This is so awesome.
Page one? Page what joy looks like in the brain. Sorry.
Yeah, no problem.
It's a slide right where you see slide. Oh, you don't have slide. I have slide on mine. Middle of the page. Middle of the page. Right under the scriptures. Do you see that? Everybody? What joy looks like in the brain. Should be your first page, maybe? First page? Now, let me tell you this. Bless Mary Hoven right here. She came, dear friend of mine and Danny's, 30 years probably. She came like almost a week early and didn't know that I was going to say help, because I worked so long to get the notes finished. And then we had to put them in these notebooks. So she worked 3 days putting this together. And Brenda back here on the back saved my bacon, because I had one idea for the front cover, the little brains. And Mary's an artist, so I thought, well, when she gets here, I'll have her draw that brain for me, and we'll put them on the sticker, the thingy. So she did. She drew it, and then we couldn't figure out how to get it on the labels, and then we were going to have to hand color it. And I mean, it was like turning into, this ain't happening, because we're still stuffing notebooks. And so Brenda's like fantastic with this kind of stuff, and I know that about her. So I called and help. She said, okay. Like, I mean, 2 days ago, so thank you. And they're so cute, these little brains.
Fun to choose.
Like, yeah.
You know, beautiful.
Yeah. And the brain loves choices. That's one of the reasons. At first, we picked out two, and it was terrible because she sent me like 12 to look at. Pick, and I went, I can't just pick these two because these are just too cute. So we ended up with four, bless her again. And then I wanted music notes on the little dancing brain, so she added the music notes for me. I mean, it was amazing. So anyway, what an ordeal, but we got it. It's good. Okay, let's see if I can figure this one out. Yep, don't you like that picture? Yeah. Joy means someone is glad to be with me. Either their face, their tone of voice, or gestures tell you that. Now, it's about 85% of communication is nonverbal. 15% of what you're taking in is what I'm saying. You're watching my face, my expressions, my body language, my tone of voice. And hopefully, as I scan this room, we'll talk about this more later, my brain's looking to see, is anybody here glad to be with me?
Yeah.
And if I can tell by your body language, your face, your countenance, your whatever, that you're glad to be with me, if my brain looks at somebody that's fallen asleep, that tells me they're not glad to be with me. And I will, without even thinking about it, my brain will go back to Christy and I'll go, oh, she's glad to be with me. Okay, I'm good. I'm all right. It's good. I can survive. It's going to be all right. Yeah. I mean, that's true. And that's true across the board. Everybody does it. And it's subconscious. So now, hopefully we don't look like that, but I just love that. It made me smile.
That's Rachel, our cow.
Is that our cow, Rachel? Which one? The upside down one or the...
Yeah, the one that jumped the fence.
Oh, yeah. Twice. Yeah. Have you ever heard of a cow jumping the fence? It's just weird. Okay. So communication happens simultaneously on two levels. Right now we're communicating. You're listening to my words, and you're following my words in the left hemisphere of your brain. The right hemisphere of your brain and the right hemisphere of my brain are actually communicating. It's pretty dangerous saying I can't read your mind. Well, NASA tells us differently. Like Marie's brain and my right brain, because we have such long history, I can look at her and tell pretty much what she's thinking. And especially if the devil starts messing around, boy, you see it all over her. She goes to war. She gets bow and arrow and everything. So pickaxe, whatever it takes. So, and this communication that's happening is nonverbal pretty much. NASA could set up its machine in this room and hand and individually identify each person's brain communication. It's like our fingerprint in our brains. And the fact that my brain's receiving it or not receiving it. You know, if you're not happy to be with me, I'm going to not look at you a lot. Now, if I don't look at you, don't think I think you're not happy to be with me. But it's pretty amazing. I'm not looking at you as intently as you're looking at me. So you're getting more information than I am. I'm getting this 9 times a second. Boom, boom, boom. She's happy to be with me. She's happy. Oh, she's fallen asleep. Oh, she's on the phone. Oh, she's, you know. So you're gathering way more information from my brain than I'm gathering from yours. Now, if I need it, if my brain needs it, I will intentionally, subconsciously lock in on Marie and know it's okay. There's one person in here that likes this. You know, that's an example of reality. Now, you do that in every relationship you have. And that's why eye contact is vital and critical. When your spouse is talking to you, don't pick up the newspaper and put it up here in front of your face. I hear you, honey. No, that's the opposite. You probably hear about it if you do that. So when we look at somebody's face, whatever emotion they're feeling is being projected by their brains. And if we keep looking at them, if we're not careful and we don't have much joy capacity, we will begin to feel that anger and find ourselves angry or depressed or hopeless or sad or glad, happy, joyful, right? It's true. So start paying attention and you'll see what I'm saying as you're interacting with people. My brain and your brain registers the expression on somebody's face in 40 milliseconds. Wow. So before you can put your mask on, my brain's already seen what you're thinking and feeling. And you can't change it. You can't hide it. Then you put that mask on, but it's too late. All right, let's talk about infants because this is where it all begins. For an infant, this is what shapes the way their brain grows. If they're in a home with parents that have a lot of joy, I'm glad to be with, mom and dad are glad to be with each other, mom and dad are glad to be with baby, then that joy will actually shape the brain structure in that infant. And it will be large and that brain will be connected to joy. Now, if that's not present, that brain will connect to fear and anxiety. And they'll have anger, depression, etc. Now, let me say this. Because, you know, we're not the same person we were 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 50 years ago, depending on your age. We're not, right? So don't go, oh, man, I blew it with my baby because I was depressed or I was angry all the time or whatever. Here's the thing. This can change at any point. This isn't concrete. There's always hope, and Yahweh is the one that can structure that baby's brain. We do something here called, I named it the Baby Brain Download, and we have people that, for themselves, that grew up in a low-joy home, and we'll actually have them encounter the Lord and ask him to take them back to their birth when mom or dad or whoever was feeding them, because that's when your brain does that the most as an infant. And we'll ask Yeshua to come and be that parent and feed that baby. And because when that baby's feeding, that baby's left eye is looking in that, whoever's holding that bottle or whoever's feeding that baby's left eye is locked into that mama or daddy or whoever's left eye. And that baby is literally downloading your brain. It's crazy. It's amazing. And here's the thing. Yahweh stacked the deck in our favor because when our child is born, we get this rush of hormones that flood our brains, and the nucleus accumbens, which is where your relational circuits are, actually grows just at the birth of your baby. And if you're a grandparent, it happens at the birth of your first grandchild, big time. And boy, did I feel that with our first grandson. And then each child born after, you get another burst of growth hormones for your brain. So there's hope, is what I'm saying. So, and if you're one of those, like I was, that grew up without this as a baby, my mom propped the bottle in the crib, and I didn't get the cuddle, hug, eye to eye. I didn't. And so I grew up with fear. I was afraid of everybody, everything. And then there was lots of reasons in my childhood why that was caused to grow even more so. And the Lord himself gave me what I never got when he started it around 30 years old. And he began to give me what I didn't get as a child, as an infant. And it completely transformed my physical brain, my heart brain, the way I viewed life, my thoughts, etc. So there's hope.
Yes. Yeah.
There's hope, Aiden. Yeah. There's hope, Miriam. No guilt. Everybody in this room, everybody is a parent right now. No guilt. No guilt. Amen. It doesn't belong here. All we need is Yeshua, and he'll do it. And he can do it in 5 minutes. Doesn't take a lifetime. 5 minutes, okay? So, let's go to the... Joy addresses the number one need of all humanity, and that is belonging. You need more than anything, more than love. You need to know that you belong. Every human wants to know that they belong. And Yahweh created us that way, and Yahweh set the lonely in families. He says he does that. He gives us the family, and it's supposed to be the church. The church doesn't always. Our definition of church in America is different, I believe, from the definition Yahweh intended in the entire Bible, and also in the book of Acts, for sure, we see it. So joy is at the heart of belonging. If you want to belong, you got to know that somebody's glad to be with you, and you got to believe it. You know, people can express that to you for years, and you choose not to believe it, and it won't change you. If we aren't joy-centered, then we will feel like we're living in a nightmare. That's how critical it is for us to know that somebody's glad to be with us. If you have low joy, your brain will hate your life. Joy is what ignites the transformation process. We have to know that somebody's glad to be with us if we want to be transformed. And it is best if it starts with Yahweh and Yeshua. But sometimes people can't get to Yahweh and Yeshua because they're afraid of him or for all kinds of reasons. So that's where we get to be an ambassador and we get to be Christ-like, called a gentle protector, and be able to embrace porcupines and skunks and fill in the blank, right? And love them in the midst of their upset until they're transformed, until we reproduce ourselves. All right, John 15:11 says, these things I've spoken to you so that my joy, this is Yeshua speaking, may remain in you, may be in you, and that your joy may be made full. Yahweh wants you to experience joy, not just a little bit, but in fullness. He died for this.
Come on. Yeah.
It's a gift. It's a blessing. Okay. Both the Bible and neuroscience teach and understand that joy is a relational experience in which someone's glad to be with us. So I'm going to, you can see here this list of what joy is. Joy is the excitement around the exchange of everything that is good for life. Joy is relational. Joy is contagious. Joy is transforming. Joy starts with a smile. Joy helps our brain feel better than any health food. Come on. Joy reduces stress. Joy has more social impact on other people than looking sexy. Joy improves. Joy improves our immune system more than exercise. Joy protects marriages. Joy raises brighter, more resilient children. Joy improves resiliency after disasters. Joy spreads and helps transform lives. Amen. And the joy of the Lord is our strength. Amen. So Yahweh's joy, that means Yahweh is glad to be with you. That's your strength. And if you don't believe that, that should be number one priority on your list of what you need to do to start this joy journey, is ask the Lord, why don't I believe that you're glad to be with me? Would you show me where that happened? Where did that first begin? And it might have begun in the womb. It might have begun as an infant when your dad wasn't glad to be with you, or your mom wasn't glad to be with you, or whatever. It could be all kinds of things. But the Lord can show you the root. And if you have a root, that means you have fruit. That means you're not going to believe that he's glad to be with you. So you deal with the root. And he'll pull the root out, tell you the truth, put the seed in there. Man, I love being with you. And then that grows and everything can change from that point forward. Mm-hmm. All right, there's three things necessary for joy to grow. A multi-generational community. That means the young and the old live together, do life together. Not live together, but do life together on a regular basis. Number two, a lifestyle of encountering Yahweh. Now, this isn't Rhonda saying this list. I didn't do this. This is brain science.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. This is brain science.
Yeah.
A lifestyle of encountering what they say is a God of love. That's how they say it. And I'm just not going to give any other God any credit. I call him who he is, is Yahweh, right?
Amen.
And number three, relational brain skills. At the end today, we're going to list out 19 of the relational brain skills that we, if you want to be a gentle protector, which we're going to talk about, you must have these brain skills to be in a healthy relationship with others. Okay? All right, let's look now at how our brain develops. And when we do that, we're going to understand a little bit better why Yahweh rewards us with joy. That's one of the ways he rewards us. As a baby, joyful interactions with our mothers, fathers, or those who feed us, and other primary caregivers shape the structure, chemistry, and function of your brain, of that baby's brain. The foundation of joy that is built in the first year of life profoundly affects our identity and relationships throughout our entire life, unless we invite the Lord in to fix what got broken or what didn't happen, right? If we start our life in fear, we will feel anxious about almost everything. I think it's important for you to ask the Lord, or you may already know this, what condition was my mother in when I was born and when she fed me? Unless somebody else fed you. But whoever that was, it was your primary caregiver, what condition emotionally was she? And that'll maybe eye-opening. It was for me when the Lord showed me what situation my mom was going through. No wonder I was afraid of everybody and had so much anxiety about people and being around people, etc. It made sense. So your brain, Yahweh created your brain to be biased towards joy. That's good news. That means our brain naturally is like a magnet towards somebody's glad to be with me. Yeah. If you notice people in your life, if you think about it, people that you are drawn to, unless you are unhealthy and you've got some codependency or some addictions, but if you don't and you're just naturally drawn, those people will be expressing in some way they're glad to be with you. And that your brain loves that because your brain's wired for that. Now this world comes in and messes up our brains and makes us think otherwise. Joy is our most powerful desire, and we're designed to seek joyful interactions automatically from birth. Have you ever, those of you that have had babies or grandbabies or your aunt and you got a baby, you notice that baby is, they're not looking at your chin. They're looking, that baby's looking in your eyes. And that baby will lock onto your eyes if you're a safe person. And that baby will just, you know, and then what do? We respond to that by we want that baby to smile. We want to respond and help that baby smile. So perfectly sane grown adults become blabbering crazy people when a little baby's around. We just do things we would never do, you know. Goo goo gaga stuff, you know, right? And that's because my brain, that baby's brain, wants to connect through joy. And when we grow up and get more mature, we don't goo goo gaga each other. But we do it differently. We still do it. We just do it differently, right? Joy stimulates the growth of the identity region of our brain. And that's true to the day you die. That's what's the good news here. You can't say, oh, man, I didn't get this at birth, so I'm just sunk. No, no, no. You're never too old. This can change starting today. When we are empowered by joy, we're able to suffer, withstand pain, and still remain intact relationships with other people. Yeah. That's the goal, is that you can experience upset, you can have somebody trigger you, and you will still honor them, you'll still love them, you won't blame them, you won't point the finger, you won't go home and tell your wife all or your husband all about it and complain about that person, but you will feel love and connection and glad to be with them, even in upset, and pursue that. Without joy, you're going to view problems as win or lose. So without joy, when a problem arises, you're going to view that as, I'm going to win or lose in this disagreement. Marie just triggered me. And if I don't have, it's okay, or you didn't. She made a sad face. My brain went ding dong. But Marie just triggered me. and I feel it. I recognize because I know what my triggers look like before they happen. And if I have enough joy capacity, I can stay right here and say, you know what, Marie? You're so important to me. We've been friends 30 years. You're so important to me that I just need to tell you, I realize I just hurt you, and I got hurt as a result, and you're so important to me. I'm not okay with that. Can we talk? We call that a relational sandwich. You make the person more important than the problem. And you go, you state the truth about that relationship. You present the problem, the upset, the trigger, the ouch. And then you sandwich it with another, you're so important to me. Can we talk about this? Because of joy capacity, you're able to do that. If you don't have it, you won't do it. You'll go, you'll blow up, you'll fight, flight, or freeze. You'll do one of those three, or sometimes a little bit of both. Yes?
Can you repeat the sandwich?
We're going to look at it again in a minute.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I gave you, that was a sneak peek of what's, yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. But it's relationship, problem, relationship. You state the relationship you have with that person. You, with love, explain the problem, the upset. And then you end it with, man, my relationship, you're too valuable to me to let anything come between us. Can we talk? So, in a nut sense. So when we're, okay, if I don't, then I'm going to view that situation as win or lose. I have to win. Sally triggers me. I'm going to let you have a little breather break. My dear, dear, mercy-hearted, delightful friend. Sally triggers me about something. And I feel very much that she's wrong. And we'll talk about why that can be. Implicit memories do that to us. But if I don't have enough joy capacity, I will respond by blaming her, attacking her, shutting her down, or fleeing. I'm done with this conversation. I'm going to hang up, or I'm going to walk away. It depends on your method of self-protection. Everybody has different means of self-protecting. But self-protection, remember what I said, it's the most damaging response style there is in a relationship. So that's why I'm going to stress this relationship sandwich. It will prevent you from responding like a predator, because that's what that is, when you blame, when you just shut down. I used to shut down. I mean, Danny do something I didn't like, or he'd hurt my feelings or whatever. I went so deep inside myself, I couldn't even find me. And I wouldn't say a word. I'd look out if we were in the car. I mean, I can remember a specific situation, and we rode for hours. That's not like me. Till I just looked out the window and never said a word. That was me self-protecting, because he hurt me and I didn't know what to do about it.
Yeah.
I didn't feel empowered because of my childhood, etc. Yeah. But not anymore.
Hallelujah.
You can change, right? All right, let's go. For babies, joy is created from pleasant smells, being kept at just the right temperature, smiles, and a warm voice tone. So if you're interacting with an infant, remember those things. Make sure you got on a little perfume. No. Make sure you smell good. Make sure that baby's not too hot, not too cold. I had to learn that. My firstborn was a little more cold natured, so she needed more blankets. My second one, hot, you know, I couldn't figure it out. I'd want to wrap her up, and she'd cry and fuss. I remember just stripping her naked, and she laid in her crib just happy as she could be, you know. So, except her diaper. She had her diaper.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Dangerous.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But so you learn that child, you keep that baby at the right temperature because a baby can't fix their own body temperature. They can't negotiate, navigate it. This joy bond that happens because you're doing that for them will increase the identity portion of their brain, where their identity is, where it says, where you say, I'm good, I'm right, I belong, I'm fine, there's nothing inherently wrong with me. That's what happens in that baby when you take the time to do that. So, and if you aren't, if you don't have that joy bond and you're feeding that infant, that baby will, and it over, that doesn't mean like one time you have a bad day, you just ruined your baby. That's not what I'm saying. I'm talking about over consistently. If that happens, then that baby will bond to the food instead of the person. And then food becomes the joy substitute. And this is according to Rhonda and a lot of experience with God encounters. This isn't brain science saying this. I found people with eating disorders, 100% of them, we go back to the womb, back to the birth, and their parent didn't bond with them. There was no joy bond. They bonded to the food, and it created this massive food problem, eating disorder. Anorexia or bulimia, I've found it in both. And some people have both of those. So, and you can fight all day long to try to get over that eating disorder. And sometimes you can do it through your will, but that's very difficult because it's such a powerful drive to bond, remember? Belonging is the number one driving force in every human. So they want to bond, they want that food because it tells them they belong. So what we do, if you can get them to go back and have the Lord come at birth and let him bond with them and download his brain into them supernaturally, instead of to replace the brain that they downloaded at birth that told them they didn't have value or worth or wasn't worth, etc., right? Mm-hmm. Powerful. So these are some photos of life on the farm here. Community living. By delighting in relationships, we create belonging around ourselves. I'm going to say that again. By delighting in relationships, we create belonging around ourselves. And as a gentle protector, that's one of our number one mandates from the Lord, is to create belonging. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, that's great.
I think that picture, the picture right there, that's Sarah, used to be Butterfield. She's Sarah Triplett now, and Juliana. We were moving chairs or something in this truck, and they decided to make it a joy bonding experience and jumped in the chair and going down the road to deliver these chairs somewhere else. I love that.
Yeah.
Just love it.
So fun.
Okay. Now we get to look at some really, really, not that that wasn't important, that was like the foundation. This is my, one of the main things I would desire for you to take away today is response styles. And I'm going to say up front, there's no guilt, there's no shame, there's no condemnation. As I describe these response styles and you find yourself in one of them, and it might not be pretty, we all came from that. We all came from dysfunctional response styles. And the goal here is for us to identify areas where we might still be responding like a predator or like a possum, right? And to bring that to the Lord and get to the root of it, so that we can become Christ-like, right? So, Mary, I'm going to need Vanna White up here for me, right? Mary's decided to be Vanna White. All right, gentle protectors. We're going to talk about them first. There we go. Gentle protector. Cuddly lamb like Yeshua.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
we're using that animal to represent gentle protectors. These are usually untraumatized people who grow up in high joy homes. Those are the ones that tend to become gentle protectors. Now, that doesn't mean you, if you grew up in a low joy home, you can't be a gentle protector. I had a no joy home, not low. I had no joy home growing up, and I'm not there yet, but I'm way more gentle protector than I am predator or possum. Like I said, I used to be the possum. I also called myself Eeyore for years. And I would say to people, thanks for noticing me. And I just think to myself, that was my cry for somebody to be glad to be with me. And I did that when Danny and I remember telling Danny, 1976, thanks for noticing me. And I'd say it, I didn't say it to many people because people weren't safe. But that was a cry in my heart. And I traded in Eeyore for Tigger. So I now say I'm like Tigger, full of joy. So gentle protectors, let's describe them. Gentle protectors have strong, joyful identities. They're glad to be with people. And they welcome other people into their group. And they have tender hearts toward weakness. If you say, okay, well, I like being around people. I like welcoming people into my group, but you aren't being tender. When somebody triggers you, you can mark that off. To be a gentle protector, you have to be gentle with weakness. You have to respond with kindness. Now, that doesn't mean we let people continue in their un-Christ-like behavior. Gentle protectors don't do that. They actually confront, but they do it with love, because of love. All right? Protectors, gentle protectors, do not exploit the weaknesses they see in other people. But instead, they step in and help those who are weak, those who are vulnerable in their community to grow in joy. They teach joy skills, relational skills. Protectors do not enable dysfunctional behavior, but quickly protect the weak. When our community has high joy, members tend to develop strong protector skills. I'm going to add this. This isn't in your book. Another thing that gentle protectors do, we'll talk about it later, but I'm going to add it here. You can write it in if you want. They reproduce themselves. Their heart is to not just be the only gentle protector. They want to produce other gentle protectors. I know, isn't that the best? Look at that. Look at that. I searched hours to find this sheep that would have babies that could. And then these gentle protectors, they don't just reproduce them, they help them mature and grow into gentle protectors. And one of the ways they do that, well, there's a number of ways, but one of the ways is by modeling it. If you don't model it, you're going to reproduce after your own kind. You know, Yahweh said that in Genesis. Animals reproduce after their own kind. Plants, humans, Adam and Eve reproduced fallen man after their own kind. But we get to reproduce after our own kind if we're a gentle protector. If you're a possum, you're going to reproduce possums. If you're a predator, you're going to reproduce predators. So, all right, let's look at predators. Now, I struggled with this one because Yeshua is the lion of the tribe of Judah. And I thought, oh, should I use the lion as a general protector? And I just really felt the Lord say, nope, the lamb paints a really good picture for us of a general protector. Now, Satan is a lion. He counterfeits. He copies. Yeshua is the lion of the tribe of Judah. And Satan has copied him and tried to steal his identity and says that he's a lion. He's walking around the earth seeking somebody to devour. That's what predators do. There, and the lion is the top of the food chain. Predators always want to be the top of the food chain. They will kill you if you try to take their place in a community. So predators are the primary fear-based response styles in a community. Predators are the result of low joy environments. The lack of relational skills inevitably reduces us to primary predatory behaviors. You hear that? We're going to look at those relational skills. They're important. But the lack of them is what causes us to become predatory in our nature. Our brain is pre-wired for predatory responses. That means you don't even have to figure it out or think about it. You're going to respond automatically if your joy tank is low, like a predator. And when somebody triggers you, you're going to self-protect, and even worse than protecting yourself, the next thing a predator does is they attack, they blame. If you hadn't said it that way, then I'd be fine. You didn't do that. If you would only, why do you do, you know, that's a predatory style. And without training, predator responses are all we have left. That's the result of Adam and Eve. And that's where we got that. We need training by gentle protectors who respond tenderly to our weakness. And if we don't get that, we will respond like a predator and or like prey. Depends on your personality, which one you choose. If you're a fighter, you're probably going to be more like this lion, you know. If you want to just disappear, you'll become like a possum. All right, predators discover the weaknesses and vulnerabilities of others and exploits them. Predators use weaknesses to obtain or remain at the top of the food chain. And here's some of the ways they do that. By intimidating, threatening, shaming, manipulating, controlling. Let's add blaming on there so that they can remain in their position of not being guilty. They don't want to be guilty. That thought is more than they can handle. So they're going to attack. So I would add blaming to that. It's a big deal with predators. Predators fiercely guard their positions and will hurt others in the community if threatened. Predators often wear a mask to look like sheep. And in our case, the lion is wearing a mask to look like Yeshua, the lion. The mask makes him or her appear friendly, approachable, and trustworthy, which allows them to secretly discover the weaknesses of other people. And it's subconscious. You go, oh, I don't do that. Well, if it's subconscious, you're not aware you're doing that. Predators believe they are always right and everyone else is wrong. They do their best to hide their weaknesses and appear strong to assure their positions. Those who challenge the opinion of a predator are likely to be eaten alive or driven away because they'll be blamed. The predator will blame them and will self-protect. That's the two main, if I had to say two main characteristics, if you see that in yourself, you're having a predatory moment where you're defending yourself, thinking you're right, because that's what makes you defend yourself. You think you're right, and blaming other people. That's predatory behavior, which we don't see that as predatory behavior, right? But it is. Okay, the third relational response styles in a community of possums. Now, it's so funny. I have a cat. We have a cat. A cat has us, actually. This cat found us. Yeah. And so, of course, we couldn't let it starve to death, so we started feeding it, and this cat now has become our friend. And this last week, no, 2 weeks, since I was working on these handouts, I look out there at night when I feed this cat. This cat likes two suppers. Spoiled. Yeah, he's spoiled. The hobbits. He's a hobbit cat. He has first supper and second supper and breakfast. every night. So first supper, he usually eats about half of it, and then he disappears. And then he comes back and scratches on the door. He wants his bowl full again. He can't eat the leftover. So we fill it up. Well, the last 2 weeks, almost every night I look out there and there's a possum eating his cat food. And I mean, right there in my door, my glass, like I'm got my hand on that handle and the possum just looks up at me like, hi, and goes back and eats some more. So I open the door and like, get out of here. And he just cowers and hides like I can't see him. I mean, one was a young one, and then now Mama's coming. Young one went home and told Mama. So anyway, I thought, that is so bizarre. Here we are talking about possums.
Yeah.
So possums are the other fear and anxiety-based response styles. Possums do not occupy positions of dominance in a community, and their style is based primarily on avoiding being exploited by predators. Possums have usually been hurt in relationships, and they'll do almost anything to avoid being hurt again. Possums hide, avoid, minimize, withdraw, and conceal their weaknesses as much as possible. Their low joy environment creates weaknesses and vulnerabilities that are impossible to conceal. Predators are likely to spot and exploit the vulnerabilities in possums, leaving them feeling ashamed, used, and fearful. Now, I used to think it was a good thing that I would just completely shut down when somebody was confronting me or somebody hurt me or what. I thought it was a good thing because it was Christ-like, because I grew up in a home where everybody exploded. Mom and Dad exploded in rage and violence. And so I just figured, this is Christ-like, I'll just be quiet. You know, Yeshua went like a lamb before the slaughter, didn't say a word. So here I go. That's what I did. And it wasn't that I thought it all out. I can just look back and see how it just naturally happened. So I figured if I could just be quiet and disappear, nobody'd get hurt, myself included. But what I didn't realize was it was hurting everybody, right? Because there's something called healthy shame we're going to talk about, that when we speak the truth in love, that other person feels healthy shame over how they treated you, and that healthy shame is meant to cause them to repent and turn. So we'll talk more about that in a bit. All right, your brain needs a break. So we're going to take a 5-minute on the dot. Don't go start a 15-minute conversation with somebody. I'm going to time it. 5 minutes, stand up, stretch, give your brain a break.